Now You Can Teach to Change Lives. This is the fourth session of the Seven Laws of the Teacher series, part of the Applied Principles of Learning curriculum. Your speaker, Dr. Howard G. Hendricks, is a trailblazing Christian educator who practices what he preaches. A best-selling author, Dr. Hendricks is distinguished professor at Dallas Theological Seminary and chairman of the Christian Leadership Center there. In this message on the law of communication, Dr. Hendricks will challenge you to understand and utilize an 8-step process to impart information effectively. And now, Dr. Howard G. Hendricks.
Malcolm Muggeridge said it, "Books on communication almost all have one surprising feature in common. They display a singular incapacity to communicate themselves." I want to dramatize the difficulty of communication. I want to conduct an experiment. And I've asked my friend, Bob Stark, to come up. Bob, if you'll come up and stand here facing in that direction. This calls for a very secure individual. And this is the kind of person I have. You'll hold that up close to you, Bob. There is a coat on this chair, Bob. And what I would like you to do is to tell me how to put that coat on. Don't assume anything. Whatever you do, don't look back. Just keep looking in that direction till I tell you to. And you can't ask any questions. All you can do is give me instructions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Roger.
Bob.
Sense of humor also.
First, take the coat off the chair. It has two long cylindrical pieces on it, but those are the arms, just so we understand terminology. Take it, and the portion that's between the arms goes on your back. But before it goes on your back, your arms need to go inside of those two cylindrical pieces of that coat. Preferably one arm in each. And you know it's wrong unless there are pockets hanging on each side of you. How's he doing? I can't ask questions. There's a shiny part of that coat that's supposed to be on the inside. That's called the lining. If it's on the outside, you've probably got it on wrong. If each arm is separately in one of those cylindrical objects on the coat, and the pockets are exposed on the outside, and the back is on the back, and the shiny part is on the inside, you've got it on right. If you don't, I'm lost.
All right. Turn around and find out. Give him a hand.
Thank you. That is right.
You think that's easy? Try it. There isn't a man or a woman in this room who has not put on a coat thousands of times. I dare you to try to explain it to someone else, taking nothing for granted. Pick it up by the lapel, someone said to me. What's the lapel? Make sure the pockets are in the right direction. What's a pocket? Now, what is the object of this experiment? I'll tell you. It's to give you a healthy respect for the process of communication. Communication is not a piece of cake. And if you have a proper respect for the process, then a number of things will take place. Number one, you will pray more and more intelligently. You will study and work much harder. And you will learn to trust God at a much deeper level. Communication is our number one teaching problem. It's the reason for our existence. It's our business. And don't forget what business you are in. The word communication comes from the Latin word communis, C-O-M-M-U-N-I-S, meaning common. You see, we must establish commonness before we can communicate. It's a process of bridge building. Now I want to recommend for you today an 8-stage model. By the way, if you're having problems with insomnia, I've got a choice recommendation. Not long ago, I read a tome, 850 pages, on the process of communication. And if you're having trouble going to sleep at night, I will guarantee you 2 pages in this book will put you in the second or third stage of anesthesia. Absolutely paralyzing. So I'd like to take this very complicated process and put it in a form that you can understand. Now, please understand that you are going to have to study this. You're going to have to master this. And one time through won't do it. You have to make this your own property. All communication begins. All communication begins with a concept, feeling, action. That is to say, all communication has 3 essential components. There is an intellectual component. There is an emotional component. And there is a volitional component. There is something I know, there is something I feel, and there is something I am doing. And I want to communicate that to another individual. Now, our problem in the evangelical community intrigues me because it's our greatest asset. The greatest asset to an evangelical Christian who believes in the authority and inspiration of the Scripture is that he's got a body of truth given to him by revelation. You don't have to manufacture the message. You only have to declare it. The problem is this. Most of us settle for intellectual communication. So we rely so heavily upon words. And we are convinced that if we tell people the right thing, that will automatically solve their problem. And we are very weak in the feeling action component. And particularly this one, because it threatens us out of our socks. See, the moment I mention emotions, everybody gets a little edgy. Because we think we're talking about emotionalism. That's emotions out of control. Emotions in control is the name of the game. God so loved the world that he gave. God's method is always incarnational. He loves to take his truth and wrap it in a person. He takes a clean individual and he drops them in the midst of a corrupt society in order to demonstrate the power of his grace. Now notice, if you know something thoroughly, and if you feel something deeply, and if you are doing something consistently, you have great potential for being an excellent communicator. But all 3 must be present. It begins there, but it doesn't stop there. That concept, feeling, action, has to be translated into words. There's no communication, essentially, apart from words. Words are symbols. And we take those words, those symbols, and we arrange them in a particular order, which is called a system. We have syntax. We have grammar. It's not any words in any order. But again, we're hung up. We think it is a word message that we are trying to communicate, and it is not. It is a life message. You need to understand that there are two essential forms of communication. There is verbal communication, which primarily takes two forms. It takes the form of speaking, and it takes the form of writing. You say, which one is more important? They are both important. They each have certain advantages and certain disadvantages. One of the advantages of speaking, particularly if it's in an interactional session, is that you can watch me. You can see how I am excited about it. When I put it in words, you lose the personality. But when I'm there, present, you can say, good night, this guy is convinced that this works. Furthermore, you can ask me questions so that you understand. But the great danger with most speaking, particularly where it's a one-way street, is that there are a lot of misunderstandings. There are a lot of questions that people have. And furthermore, it goes right by you, and you have no opportunity to return to it again. I heard the message. It's over. I'd like to go over it again. So we need to put more material in writing, and particularly in this generation, put more of our material on tape. Let me tell you what we are doing in our process of discipleship in Dallas. The moment we lead a man or a woman to Christ, one of the first things we do is to make sure they have a tape recorder. If they got a tape deck in their car, we're in business. If not, we buy a little set about that big, very inexpensive. It does not record, it merely plays back. And we give those people a set of tapes, and they play those tapes, and they play those tapes, and they play those tapes, until finally they can quote me better than I can quote myself. But there's more than verbal communication. There is also non-verbal communication. And by the way, these two forms must be congruent. That is, what you say must correspond with what they see. See, Jesus Christ never said anything or never did anything that contradicted what he said. They were always in perfect harmony. And I can tell you as a teacher, you know, I'm really interested in you. In fact, I love you. But that's just a set of words. If I'm never available, if I'm very sloppy in my preparation, I am conveying a message, you are not important enough for me to do my homework and for me to spend time with you. So the verbal message sounds good. The non-verbal message totally contradicts the verbal message. Now I want you to put a couple things under that. Let me begin by giving you just a little data. You'll look on the screen. I'll show you some research that was done by Albert Mehrabian at Yale University. And what he did was to come up with a formula as to how we communicate. He said you communicate by words alone 7%. How's that grab you? Particularly for many of us who are like old McDonald's wife with a talk-talk here and a talk-talk there and a here-talk, there-talk, everywhere talk-talk. The second fact is tone of voice. That is how you say what you say. Three words. I love you. But how do I say that? I love you! All right, wife, I love you. Now get off my back. You know, that comes across like horseradish. Now look at that third one. 55% by body language. That's your gestures, your posturing, your movement. And by the way, every married man in this audience is an authority on that figure. You guys ever walk in the door coming home from work? Your wife says, "Hi, honey." "Hi. How'd it go today?" "All right. What's the matter? Did you have a rough day?" "No, no. Well, I sense there's something bothering you." "There's nothing bothering me." But the truth of the matter is, you're coming through loud and clear. Man, I can walk in the front door and never open my mouth, and Gene will tell you exactly what I'm thinking and how I'm feeling. Because the average woman has a built-in radar screen that just keeps squick, squick. And these blips come up all over the thing. And may I tell you, if you are working with children and young people, you better believe it. If you can't take it any other way, you take it by faith. That kid can see right through you. And that kid is not looking for a perfect person, but he is looking for an honest one, a growing one, because non-verbally, he is picking up all of the symptoms. I don't know how many times somebody has asked me the question, "Brother Hendricks, do you think it's more important to witness by my lips or by my life?" Well, I say, let me ask you a question. Do you ever fly? "Oh, yes, I fly all the time." "Well, which is more important to you, the right wing or the left wing?" "When I fly, I prefer to have both." And may I remind you, if you are going to communicate by life alone, then everyone who had ever been exposed to Jesus Christ should have been converted, because he lived a perfect life. But the person who lived the only perfect life also shared his message verbally with his generation. Now, these words have to be translated in terms of speech. In other words, I've got to take those concepts, those feelings, those actions, translate them into words, and then communicate them through speech. Now, there are two things I want to put under this. First of all, this involves presentation. And secondly, it involves preparation. And I want to put a number of things under them for your notes. Let's take them in reverse order. The first thing you need to do is to prepare. That's the best insurance you can take out for communication. Preparation insurance. You need some structure. You need to package your material. And the thing that separates the men from the boys and the girls from the women is their ability to package their material. You need an introduction, something that's going to grab them, not assume that they're interested, but you're going to begin with a quotation, you're going to begin with a question, you're going to begin with a problem right out of their life that hooks them. You need a conclusion, the least prepared part of most sermons and messages. I don't know how many times I've heard a preacher, and he comes to the end, and I can watch him circling the field looking for a runway to put that baby down. And so he says, "Lastly, and in conclusion, and furthermore, and another word, and may God bless this truth to your hearts," which being interpreted means I don't have a clue as to how this works. You need illustrations. They're the windows that let in the light so that I can say, "Aha, I see it." Don't pull illustrations from someone else. Get them yourself right out of the lifestyle of the people you are teaching. Don't talk to junior kids about marital problems. They don't face them. See, talk about the problems that a junior kid is struggling with every day of the week. And you need to know those in order to use them. In presentation, I want you to put three things under this. First of all, this involves enunciation. That is speaking clearly so that people understand exactly what you are saying. The second thing you need to work on is your voice. I want to give you a couple of things to develop. First of all, you work on your volume. If you have a large class, always imagine that there is a guy on the back row that has a hearing aid and the batteries just went out. So you're going to punch the back of that auditorium to reach that dear brother. Don't assume it. That's particularly true when you first begin. Not only do you need to vary your pitch, vary your speed. If it's exciting, pick it up. If it's important, slow it down. The third thing involved in presentation is gesture. Now, there's more nonsense per square inch written on the subject than anything I know. And I watch students before a mirror going, you know, I'm going, whoo! You know what the secret to good gestures is? It's simple. There isn't a guy or a gal in this auditorium that can't learn it. It's getting it in the gut. It's feeling it so much so that when you say it's important, see, that is not important. That's important. And when you do, no speech professor can ever devise a better gesture. It also means, by the way, you're relaxed up here. You're enjoying it. Here you are at the front of the class. See, if you get into class and you grab a hold of this thing and bat your eyes, you know, as if this thing's going to get up and go out the window. See, everybody's sitting there as if they're sitting on a crate of eggs saying, oh, wow. And I've watched classes like this, and when it finally got over, you could almost hear the sigh. Whew! We made it. See, every time you teach or preach, somebody sweats. Either you do before or they do during. Now, there is a fourth component. Don't miss it. It's distraction. And there are two forms of distraction. There are those that are within the individual, those that you cannot control. And there are those within the environment, those you can control. See, I cannot control your attitude. The fact that you didn't have a good night's sleep last night. The fact that your wife is dying of terminal cancer and you just found out and you're going to call. My friend, I could be the most scintillating speaker in the world. Most of you, if you were faced with that situation, would never show up. But if you did, I'll guarantee you, you would hear very little of what I had to say. You see, you've got severe static on the line. You understand that in terms of the people you are ministering to? You need to understand the context, and that is that here in this couple's class are people who had a knockdown drag out on the way to church. When they get on a parking lot, they put their Christian face on, guy gets out of the car, you say, hi, Bill. Hi, praise the Lord. See, behind every smile is a set of teeth. What do you think he's hearing while you're talking? I'll tell you, probably nothing. He's thinking of his argument, what he's going to say to his wife, who gave him a zinger just before he got out of the car. And furthermore, she's expecting him to do that, so she's working on her case. All during the time when you got this fascinating presentation going on. Well, I can't do anything about most of those, but I need to understand them. In the environment, I can control that, the temperature of the room. This is what we call demotivator. If the temperature is just right, nobody knows about it. You assume it. It's when it's too hot, it's too cold, that you're in trouble. Secondly, what about the arrangement of the room? Do you ever get there early and rearrange the chairs? That'll blow the minds of a lot of the saints. They'll be convinced you can't teach the Bible now. You've gone to liberalism. We're facing in the opposite direction. No, I'll tell you what it might do. It might communicate to somebody, hey, what's going on today? Boy, this is going to be exciting. Let's see. In fact, it presupposes that you get there early enough to set it up. Oh, it's a riot. You talk about a humor number. There is nothing funnier than watch the average children's teacher with a flannel graph when she hasn't taken the time to arrange the figures in the order in which they are going to occur. She hasn't even taken the time to get the board at the proper angle. So now we're telling the story of Abraham, and where is Abraham? He had, and she goes on an archaeological expedition. We then go over here in the story of Joshua, and we get it right to the proper climax of the story, and because we don't have it at the proper angle, the whole thing comes down, and the kids roar. And the teacher says to me, those godless kids. I said, they're not godless, they're godly. They love to laugh. They have a sense of humor. I think it's a riot. The temperature, the arrangement of the room and the materials. But you also need to do some anticipatory thinking. You know, they pay me to sit on a platform, and this is really a floor show. It is so exciting to sit up here and watch what's going on out there. And one of the best is a baby lying across the lap of a mother, very quiet. During the course of the service, the baby comes awake. And it's okay for a while, but pretty soon he's... You know, and the sound boy's working like crazy, thinking he's got a glitch in the system. Finally, she takes the kid, you know, and puts him up here. That's good to wipe out 50 people. And you can only see it when you're up here. That's why they pay us to do this. I love to watch all of the people behind this baby who's... with the people going... There's only one that's better. And that's you're speaking to a group of people, and there's a guy comes in with a message. And he walks down the aisle, and everybody watches him. You know what I'm going to do the next time this happens? I'm going to stop and say, ladies and gentlemen, there's a man walking down the aisle. Keep your eyes on him. He is now coming up on the platform. He is talking to Brother Gumball. Brother Gumball is saying a few words. Now he's going down. Watch him carefully. There he goes. You laugh, but the interesting thing is that's happened here this week. Now, what you are trying to do is to eliminate as many of those distractions as possible. You see, up to this point, in the process, this is what you do. But beginning at this point, we are going to find out what they do. Because remember, there are two individuals or groups always involved in this process of communication. There is the sender and there is the receiver. Now, the first thing that you have is listening. And that's a very difficult skill. I have taught speech for years, and I kid you not, it is relatively simple to teach a person to speak. But try to teach a person to listen. Especially someone who tends to run off at the mouth, and who, having nothing to say, feels compelled to say something. So that's very hard, and I'll tell you why. The average person can listen from 4 to 10 times as fast as anyone can speak, which gives you a lot of time on your hands for wool gathering, for planning the deal that you're going to pull off tomorrow at the office, for working out next week's menu. And I believe, men and women, one of the great needs in our evangelical churches is to teach people how to listen. And if you want to get a good start on the subject, study listening in the Scriptures. And how many times our Lord urges people to listen. Because essentially, that's the name of the game. You are responsible. Remember the story of the wise man and the foolish man? The little song the kids sing? What's the characteristic of the wise man? He hears the word and he does it. The foolish man hears the same message and walks away. James puts it this way, it's like looking in a mirror. You see that your face is dirty, your hair needs to be combed, but you walk away and you do nothing about it. And that's why you need to combine your speaking with visualization so that they can see what they hear. That's why you use illustrations. That's why you use what we call analogical thinking, analogies. Please note the large number of parables that Jesus used in the process of teaching. Now, once a person has listened, then that person has to translate what he or she has heard into words. But please note, these are different words from these words. These are your words. These must become his words. So if I'm talking to a group of people and I'm constantly referring to the calorific effulgence of the physiognomy ideologized by the parovector of the... This guy says, really? I had one, but the wheels fell off. And I guess this is what just tears me up. How many people who are professionally in teaching have never caught this picture? So we give an exam. Some of you have had one. Professor asks you a question. You write it out. You get marked down. 5 points. You say, well, that isn't wrong. It's right. You go to the professor, you say, hey, what happened? He says, well, you didn't put it in my words. Well, then you ought to ask, sir, why in the world did you not ask? Please give this concept in my words and no other. That's what we're doing in our churches. We're teaching people to feedback words, but they're not theirs. There's somebody else's. So they can go down all of the lists and tell you all of the things that this individual said you're supposed to know and can't live without. But I've never been able to translate them into my own vocabulary. By the way, that's why I love to work with laymen. You see, some of us who are professional in the field are educated beyond our intelligence. And I love to work with professional football players, and I love to work with medical doctors and with lawyers and with businessmen and with homemakers who will take the truth and express it in their medium of expression with which they are comfortable. And I come away and say, man, they've got it. But it's their personal property. Now, notice where all of this leads. Begins with a concept, feeling, action, and it ends with a concept, feeling, action. Difference? It's not what goes in over here, but what comes out over here. See, it's not what do you think, it's what does he think. It's not what do you feel, it's what does she feel. It's not what are you doing, but what are they doing? That's the test of communication. There's one final step. Don't miss this one, or you miss it all. When I get to this place, then I've got to get some feedback. See, I've got to get these individuals to tell me something. So I may ask them to write it in their own words. Tell me how you can apply this in your sphere of influence. I say, are there any questions? And the interesting thing is, they will ask the most perceptive questions to show that you have not put what you want them to know, what you want them to feel, what you want them to do in a form that they can understand. You realize there are huge holes in your communication. Feedback is essential. Now, what we do is tend to select the people we're listening to. And we listen to the people who think we're the greatest. And you ask them, how did I do? Oh, wonderful. Well, every time I hear you, it's like listening to Paul. And I have the strongest urge to say, Paul who? That's the problem with the average preacher. After he's finished, he goes to the back for what I call the glorification of the worm ceremony. Everybody comes by, shakes his hand, says, oh! Oh, wonderful! Isn't it refreshing to have some honest individual who comes by and says, you know, I don't have a clue as to what you're talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, hear me. The purpose of communication is not to impress. It's to impart. The purpose of communication is not simply to convince, but to change. And most people communicating, whether it's from the pulpit or whether it's in a Bible study class, are focused on the wrong end of the process. They are focusing upon what they are doing as a communicator. As a sender, rather than on what they are doing, the receptor, the student. I repeat, the ultimate test of communication is not what do you think, not how do you feel, not what are you doing. The ultimate test of communication is what do they think. How do they feel? What are they doing? And when you think clearly and feel deeply and behave consistently, you have the potential of becoming a very effective communicator.
You've been listening to Dr. Howard G. Hendricks, professor, author, and Christian educator, speaking on the law of communication. This cassette tape message is part of the Applied Principles of Learning curriculum developed by Walk Through the Bible. Other materials are available to help you get the most from this life-changing series on the seven laws of the teacher, including a seven-part video series, course notebook, video leader's guide, and course textbook by Dr. Hendricks. At Walk Through the Bible, we're committed to helping you become a master communicator. We also offer an innovative companion series, The Seven Laws of the Learner, featuring Dr. Bruce H. Wilkinson, president and founder of Walk Through the Bible Ministries and a nationally known Bible teacher. For information on this series, which features a course notebook, teacher's notebook, and full-color teaching overheads, contact Walk Through the Bible Ministries at Post Office Box 80587, Atlanta, Georgia, 30366. Or telephone us at area code 404-458-9300. Walk through the Bible, called to minister for life change.